This morning we are looking at our second principle of Unitarian Universalism, which calls us to justice, equity, and compassion in human relationships. And I just want to make a note that if you pay attention on our website, we do have the seven principles, but with the second principle there is an asterisk there that you goes with the second principle, and I just want to make sure you're aware of it. The asterisk says that the principle does not necessarily apply to Gamecocks and Tigers during football season. So there's no justice, equity, and compassion in those human relations. And I can say that as a University of Georgia fan without worrying about it, because I literally have no dog in the fight. The quote I read from the Dalai Lama earlier invites us to maintain a space within ourselves, to leave compassion in our lives. And compassion, if you look at it, is a beautiful word and a beautiful experience. It's not really empathy, where empathy is a feeling or resonating with the feelings of someone else, although empathy may be involved in compassion. It's not necessarily altruism of doing something good for someone, although compassion often and usually leads to some form of altruism and doing something about it. The word compassion, where's Don? I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble later. Anytime I do linguistics, you know, and etymology, he's listening back there. But the word compassion literally means, see, I told you, to suffer with another or to be joined with suffering, be connected. I get the okay there? All right. That's literally the first nod of approval I've ever gotten. That's awesome. But what a beautiful concept. Think about that. The word by nature means to be joined or to be connected to suffering that you see, to feel it deeply. As a matter of fact, ancient languages, the words that they often use and get translated as compassion imply that there is a feeling that you feel that's deep in your bowels when you experience the emotion of compassion. This call for compassion has actually been researched and has been determined that it's an essential part of living a healthy life. In an article by Emmy Sapala, who is the science director at Stanford University's Center for Compassion and Altruism Research and Education and the author of The Happiness Track, and also you might know her, she's the co-director of the Yale College Emotional Intelligence Project. She did an entire research project on looking at all that has been done, particularly since 2013, when a professor at Berkeley, Dr. Keltner, actually developed and coined the phrase compassion instinct and how that actually impacts our lives, not only our lives, but the lives of others and our community around us. He proposed that the compassion instinct is something that we're born with. Now, we may lose it along the way, but it's at least something that we're born with and is innate in human beings and animals as well. Believe it or not, rats have been known to go out of their way when they see another rat in a trap to try to help them. Why would they do that? The researchers say that is the compassion instinct. Also, a recent study that they did found that infants' pupils increase in size when they see someone in need, which is a sign of concern, but their pupils would shrink when they could help that person, or when they saw that someone else is suggesting that they felt better or were helping that person, not simply because they get the feeling of reward, but because they see suffering alleviated. Darwin makes a case that the greatest strength of the social or maternal instincts are the social and maternal instincts in human beings and animals, and they're greater than any other instinct or motive. He argues that communities which include the greatest number of the most sympathetic members would flourish best and rear the greatest number of offspring. Literally, survival of the fittest means that we are creating a space for compassion. There are other brain studies that show that offering a gift or sharing something with someone actually stimulates brain patterns in a way that is not seen as greatly in receiving a gift. What about that? That actually giving something and the act of giving something actually trumps the ability, the brain waves that when we receive it, the pleasure centers. Giving to others also creates a well-being above and beyond any kind of money that we can spend on ourselves. In a study, these participants received a sum of money. Half of them were instructed to spend money on themselves, and the other half to spend money on others. At the end of the study, participants who had spent money on others felt significantly happier than those who had spent money on themselves. Maybe they just didn't buy the right things for themselves. I don't know. And probably this was the most fascinating thing that I read, that they evaluated the levels of cellular inflammation in people who describe themselves as very happy. Inflammation is at the root of cancer and other diseases and generally high in people who live under a lot of stress. And we might expect that that inflammation would be lower for people with higher levels of happiness. Two researchers found that this was the case for very happy people. People who lived a life of pleasure, not so much pleasure without purpose, but those who lived a life of pleasure and purpose and altruism had the lowest inflammation levels of any other people in the research. So I could go on and on. I've got a lot here. We're going to skip some of it. I can send you the link to the article, and you can read more. It's quite fascinating. But I think all of that goes to prove the Chinese proverb is accurate when it says, a bit of fragrance from a flower clings to the hand of the one that gives it. In the Christian tradition, Jesus tells the story of a Samaritan man that cares for a man who had been beaten, robbed, and left on the side of the road to die, even though religious leaders had gone out of their way not to help. The story that's often called the Good Samaritan was told by Jesus in response to a question that was asked. And the question is, who is my neighbor? What a question. Who is my neighbor? Think about that for a second. Wrestle with that question. It is the question that calls us to our second principle, to actually answer the question, who is my neighbor? It's the question that you and I ask and answer every day, every Sunday when we walk through these doors and expend the energy and the vulnerability to know and be known, to see and be seen in this covenant community. We look in the eyes and the hearts of each other every Sunday and we ask the question of Fred Rogers, won't you be my neighbor? And right now, some of you are angry because that song is in your head, right? And then others of you are wanting to change into more comfortable shoes. Who is my neighbor? That is the question that we answer. And as we answer it, we become aware of suffering and injustice in our community around us. And we are moved deep in our bowels. Who is my neighbor? It's the homeless man on the street. It's the frightened woman with mental illness living a life of paranoia and isolation. Will we ask the question, who is my neighbor? And risk letting compassion move us deep in ourselves. Who is my neighbor? It's the young man trapped in a bail bond system that you can learn about this afternoon, facing a life of imprisonment. It's the lonely senior adult who spends most days alone, longing for human interaction. Who is my neighbor? Who is my neighbor is a question that calls us to compassion, and it's a question that transcends age, economic status, race, gender, sexuality, and this is shocking, but it's a question that also transcends political affiliation. It really does. The question extends also beyond this area where you and I live. Yolanda brought up the devastating effects of Hurricane Matthew, and we've seen the devastating effects in the Bahamas of Hurricane Dorian. So who is my neighbor is a question that should be asked, that we should be asking as we see images of destruction in the Bahamas, Haiti, Cuba, and Puerto Rico. We should be answering those questions in this way. These are our neighbors. Who is my neighbor is the question that we should be asking as we hear the cries of those impacted by gun violence and feel their fear and loss. As some of the candidates mentioned in the debate, we should not wait until it affects us for it to affect us. Injustice anywhere, as King said, is a threat to justice everywhere. These are our neighbors. Who is my neighbor might be the single most important question we should be asking at the southern border, as our neighbors are treated like unpersons, caged and quarantined as if they were a disease to be contained. The current administration in the White House and all those who condone the draconian laws should be put in their place and condemned by the question that we are asking this morning: who is my neighbor? Who is my neighbor is a question that has the power to disarm all of the rhetoric of ignorance and hate that has become all too commonplace in our lives today. It is the question of compassion. It's the question that we ask because we are compassionate people. It's the question that we answer because we are listening to its call deep in our bowels. So may we here at the UUCC continue to be a place where this question is asked and answered with justice, equity, and compassion for all.